sounds odd.
Like a harpsichord or something.
Sounds like a Muzak-y kind of version of the Johnny Carson Tonight Show theme, right?
Lawrence Welk, maybe?
No, what this is the Johnny Carson theme before it became the Johnny Carson theme. This was written by Paul Anka, who later took the music from his own song and made it into the Carson theme. This is called Toot Sweet, It's Really Love, a song that Paul Anka wrote in 1959 for Annette Funicello.
Wow.
And it was recorded by Tootie's Trumpets and the Camerata Strings in 1960 as this instrumental.
Yeah.
And it has the exact same thematic sound as Johnny Carson's theme. And it became that when Anka changed it a couple of years later. But this was the original version.
I did not know that.
And I play it today to introduce our next guest. His name is Mark Malkoff, who's a comedian and a podcaster. He's the man behind the Carson Podcast. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Have you heard that before?
Have I heard about Paul Anka and about how he wrote the song?
Yeah.
I did. I actually got together with Paul Anka at his home in California, and we talked about everything, and he was making something like $400,000 residuals on that Johnny's theme, and Johnny actually was given co-author credit for not doing anything. Anka said it was better to get half of something than nothing. Anka was a smart businessman, but him and Carson were making $400,000. Estimated on annually on that theme song.
Now, you don't have to share royalties on the Carson Podcast with his estate, do you?
Thank goodness, no, because I'm not making any money. So, yeah.
What you are doing is you're making a great show, and I've enjoyed many of the episodes.
Oh, thanks.
The Carson Podcast is a celebration of a TV show that went off the air 25 years ago after being on the air for 30 years. This year marks the 25th anniversary of it leaving the air. You bring in people who had been on the show or had worked on the show, and for those who had been on the show, you get into the real specifics of the show that they appeared on, like the first time somebody was on.
Exactly.
Now, we know that Antenna TV is carrying Carson reruns. I have AT&T UVerse, so I don't have it. But Dan watches it like every night, don't
I get
you?
To get it. Oh, yeah, I watch Carson every night.
So, I mean, obviously, that's not on your schedule. So how do you go back and find the archives of whoever your guest is going to be?
A lot of it's on YouTube. Sometimes I go to the Paley Center, the Museum of TV and Radio here in New York, and they have a lot of stuff as well. Johnny Carson's nephew, Jeff Sussing, who runs Carson Entertainment Group, has been very helpful with giving me access as well. So, I mean, that's a really good point, is that even on Antenna TV, they take out the musical guests because they don't want to, that's just so expensive. So they take out the music guest, so I'm going to be interviewing a musician coming up soon. So, yeah, it's hard to find certain clips, and anything pre-1972, almost all of it was erased. So there's definitely certain people I talk to that we just I can find kinescopes here and there, but definitely certain clips are long gone, which is sad.
It is really sad that NBC erased the first 10 years of Johnny Carson's Tonight Show because it was on videotape that they wanted to reuse for game shows.
Oh.
I talked to the guy unofficially. I don't know if he'll come on my podcast, but there's a gentleman who still works at NBC who was one of the two people that wiped all the tapes. He said it was terrible. He said he didn't want to do it, but he just got hired at NBC, and they made him in New Jersey erase. He spent the summer erasing that and some other NBC show, and he said it was horrible. But it was, I guess, for NBC, it was like $500 a tape back then, which was a lot of money.
NBC can't afford the $500 per tape.
I feel
he only made $18 billion from Carson.
Yes, yeah, sorry, Boris Karloff, take that. Judy Garland, take that. It's crazy.
How about the very first show? There's no tape of the first show with Groucho Marx introducing Johnny and a guest roster that included Mel Brooks
and Tony Bennett and Rudy Valley and Joan Crawford. There's audio that exists. There's still photographs that exist, but the actual footage doesn't. The earliest kinescope footage I think I was able to find was either late 63 or maybe early 64. I think it was New Year's Eve, maybe 64. It's like Woody Allen and Louise Lasser, who he was about to get married to or just got married to. I was able to locate something recently. But there are collectors that have kinescopes, that stuff pops up, and it's it's like this lost treasure. But for the most part, you know, Ed Ames, Johnny Carson and his brilliance when Ed Ames did the tomahawk toss, Johnny had a kinescope made of just that clip, and he put it in his desk drawer and his brilliance, but the rest of the episode was lost. But yeah, occasionally there were clips.
Did you have Mel Brooks on the Carson podcast?
I did. I went to his office in Culver City, and he does very, very few interviews. The only reason he said yes, he told me later, is because I was just with Carl Reiner, and Carl told him he should do it, because I was trying to get Mel Brooks, and I couldn't get him.
Yeah.
So, he was great. I mean, he was on the very first show. He went on with Johnny quite a lot. And like a lot of people, they all say Carson was the best.
What did he tell you about what that night was like? Was Carson nervous? I mean, how did the show go? And in those days, by the way, it was 105 minutes long.
Well, the show actually started, it was an hour and 45, and the first 15 minutes would be usually Ed and Skitch Henderson. And then Johnny protested and wouldn't go on. They wanted him to go on the first 15 minutes, and then I think in 1980 or 1981, it went down to 60 minutes, but it was a long. You're right. It was very, very long. Mel Brooks said that the show went well. He was, you know, this young hotshot comedy writer, and he basically resorted to, went into his, like, Borscht Belt shtick thing, and he got on top of Johnny's desk at one point doing a bit, and I think he was making fun of Tony Bennett. Mel Brooks told me that Tony Bennett was actually upset at him because he was, you know, mocking, singing like Tony Bennett and doing high notes. But, yeah, he said it went great. You know, Groucho, you know, did an amazing 15 minutes. Mel Brooks said, if anything, he just wanted Groucho's autograph. He was that so excited just to be there with Groucho. But I think Carson was very, very smart to have Groucho, you know, have somebody that everybody accepts that loves because introduce him. Because as Carson says, I mean, the acceptance with the audience is a huge thing. And even though he was a game show host, doing late night and taking over for Jack Parr, who was one of the most beloved figures in television history, it was tough. It took Johnny, everybody says it took him at least a month, if not more, to really get his footing. And there were definitely people that didn't think he was going to make it.
When the show was an hour 45 and then an hour and a half before it got cut down to an hour, that last half hour quite often featured interesting interviews that Johnny did with people who weren't necessarily funny, you know, authors.
It was Gore Vidal. It was people, it was a lot of authors, and he loved having Carl Sagan on. Carl Sagan and Jim Fowler were two guests that he would have dinner with. Usually he would not go out to, he wouldn't socialize with the guests after the show, but the intellectual people, those two in particular, he would almost always have dinner with after the show. He wouldn't want to talk show business with anybody. It would always be, you know, he was into astronomy, he was into conservationism. So, but yeah, you're right. That last half hour was like your Buck Henry. It was Phyllis Newman. It was more authors and intellectuals and humorists.
People who do not appear on late night television ever now.
Never, never. It was a very different show. And I think Dick Cavett told me Johnny regretted it. I've heard it from other people that Carson ultimately regretted the show going down to 60 minutes. He thought it would pick up the pace, which it did pick up the pace, but it definitely lost. It lost something in terms of the bookings and in terms of what the show was. But I get that Johnny was tired. He definitely had a lot of guest hosts come in for him. And, I mean, he definitely put in his time. I mean, he lasted more than 29 and a half years as number one. No one even came close to giving him serious competition.
What about the Arsenio Hall years? That definitely put a dent in him, particularly with younger demographics, didn't it?
It did. I mean, somewhat. I mean, Johnny was still, I believe he was still number one. But, I mean, it was a different, from what I've heard and what I've read, it was a different, a lot of different, it was a much different audience. But it definitely, Johnny sensed that the tide was turning in terms of there was going to be all this more competition and cable. Everyone always said Carson had perfect timing on for everything, and he knew when to get out, and I think he got out at the right time. I mean, Arsenio was booking musical guests that Johnny never would have. I mean, Johnny's whole thing was, we have a very distinct type of music, and anything that wasn't that, they wouldn't book. I think David Geffen, after Johnny Carson retired, took out like a full ad in Variety or one of the trades saying about how Carson and The Tonight Show just damaged music for so many years, especially like rock music, I think, in particular, because he wouldn't book those acts. I think they would have to go to on Dave Letterman at 12:30. So, yeah, I think you're right with Arsenio and other perceived competition, that is one of the factors of Johnny leaving. That and the Saturday Night Live sketches with Dana Carvey playing Johnny Carson really bothered Johnny. He did not want to be perceived as sticking around too long. He didn't want to be perceived as being someone like Bob Hope. And he basically said, if they're going to make fun of me, I'm leaving.
Those skits with Carvey as Carson and Phil Hartman as a buffoonish Ed McMahon were great. And how about the night Dana Carvey did Carsenio, which was a mashup of Carson and Arsenio with the haircuts? Yeah, that was hysterical. And I can imagine how, if you're the person who's being made fun of there, Arsenio Hall, okay, you take it. Johnny Carson, you hate it.
I thought the same thing you did, and I talked to Robert Smigel, who wrote the sketch, and Johnny was upset at his sketches, but that one, Johnny, actually, it didn't bother him because he thought that they were making fun of Arsenio a little bit more than him, so he was okay. But there was one sketch in particular. I mean, there were a bunch that Johnny was really bothered about. I thought the Carsenio thing was really funny and clever. But, there were a bunch of them. Dana Carvey said that Jay Leno told him that after one of those sketches aired, that Johnny was walking through the hall at NBC Burbank and said, if they're going to make fun of me, I'm leaving.
Wow.
And that was one of those things where, again, he just did not want to be perceived as sticking around too long like Bob Hope. Even his idol, Jack Benny, he thought stuck around too long. And Johnny prided himself at his timing, and he got off stage on May 22nd, 92. I think he was like 66 years old, and he never came back. I mean, he was offered anything he ever wanted to do. And he definitely considered options, but I think he made two cameos on Letterman,
right,
unannounced, and I don't think he said anything on either, and he did this Simpsons, and then he did Bob Hope's, I think, 90th birthday. That was the final time he ever did a monologue. That was a year after I think he retired, but I believe that's it. I mean, he wrote a small piece, I think, for The New Yorker that I think Steve Martin helped get in. And that's it. I mean, he loved going on his boat, the Serengeti, his yacht. He would go to Africa with Bob Wright and Jim Fowler. He would still play his poker game with Steve Martin and Carl Reiner. But he was taking magic classes. He was getting together with his former writers in Santa Monica underneath his office. Arnold Schwarzenegger owned a restaurant called Shotzi's. He was definitely still social. He just was not. He was officially retired from show business, and America definitely missed him. But he basically said, I mean, wherever he went, people said, "We missed you. We miss you." And he said, "You can't do better than that."
I couldn't help but smiling, Mark, when you said that Steve Martin helped Johnny Carson get something into a magazine.
Yeah.
I know.
Really? Johnny Carson could just call up and say, hey, I'm faxing this over to you right now. Okay, you're in, Mr. Carson.
It's funny that you say that because I guess Steve Martin's so plugged in with The New Yorker. And I just think Johnny said, I don't even know how to really get it in. But, of course, anything that Johnny wrote, they were like little kids, so excited. And then, I mean, I neglected to also mention Johnny anonymously was faxing and sending in jokes to Dave Letterman, and then Dave was doing monologue jokes, and Johnny, again, was like a little kid, so excited to stay up and watch Dave deliver his jokes. And apparently, a lot of times when Dave would anonymously do a Johnny joke, he would do like the golf swing, just kind of like a subtle golf swing just for Johnny. And it was a wonderful, wonderful thing that this, and Dave would send Johnny checks for each joke, and Johnny would cash them and write something really kind of like a smart aleck thing in the comments and when he would cash them. And it was a great thing that I think that Dave and Johnny had that relationship, and that Johnny, up until I believe he passed, was writing those jokes.
Yeah, in fact, when he did die, Letterman did an entire monologue of Carson written jokes, which was nice. Now, Mark, you've had a lot of comedians on your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Every comedian who ever appeared on that show remembers their first time through the colored curtain, right?
It's true. I mean, it's the biggest thing in show business. I mean, I haven't talked to Jerry Seinfeld, but he says it's still the biggest moment in his career was going on Carson when he debuted. It was the gold standard. Tom Dreesen said, you know, back then, if you were a comedian, the first thing out of the public's mouth was like, oh, yeah, have you been on Johnny Carson? Into the public, to entertainment, if you did not go on that show, you were not a real comedian in America's eye, in the entertainment industry's eye. And it was the biggest deal. And when I talk to these people, I can see it on their faces. They're reliving it in front of me. And the detail that they remember from their debut, from being backstage to being standing up backstage before Johnny introduced them, it's unreal to listen to these stories.
You mentioned Jeff Sotzing before, Carson's nephew, who kind of runs the Carson Empire, and he's in charge of the archives of Carson tapes that are in a salt mine in Kansas, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. He has done a masterful job of repackaging this stuff, first on VHS and then on DVD, and now you can see it on antenna TV. Dick Cavett has also gone back and found archives of his stuff and put it out in various forms. Why don't we see any of that from David Letterman?
The NBC show is still owned by Dave's Late Night with David Letterman is owned by NBC. They put it out on Shrio, which was a cable station for a while, and that was wonderful. Dave owns the CBS show, so I had heard things from people internally that at one point they were going to release DVDs. This was like 10 years ago, and at the last minute, they changed their mind. I don't know. I mean, Dave could do what Johnny did and put out DVDs or do something digitally. I just don't know. That's a question for Dave, but I think he has zero interest in his show. And I mean, he could make a lot of money, but Dave's never been really driven by money.
Yeah.
Like that. I don't know if we'll ever see those clips. I mean, I'd be surprised if Dave does anything with them. I wish he did. I mean, the amount of people during that 23 years that he was on CBS, the guests that went by, it was some of the biggest people in music and entertainment. I hope that he does something with it.
All right, here's the last thing I want to ask you about.
Yeah.
I talked to Cliff Nesteroff, the comedy historian, recently, and I asked him if he thinks that comedy on television, particularly late-night comedy, and you worked on the Colbert Report, so you know a little bit about this. I asked him if he thinks that late-night comedians, with their monologues and even with things like The Daily Show and the Colbert Report, have had any political impact. And he said he doesn't think they did at all. Talk about that in terms of Carson in particular, because he was the guy doing the nightly monologue that America tuned in to see.
Johnny never took a political side ever. I mean, if something was out there like Watergate, he would make jokes about it. But Johnny was a liberal privately, but nobody knew that. Journalists and critics would give him a hard time all the time, and he would say, "Tell me the last time Bob Hope or Jack Benny took a political stance." And he definitely would go after people. And Peter LaSalle, who's Johnny's lifetime producer, basically said if Johnny did go after you, you were finished. And but he definitely was very, very careful not to put to voice his politics. I agree with Cliff. I mean, I really do with the current climate. I mean, it's definitely gotten the ratings up with our current political climate, and definitely Stephen Colbert is doing. I mean, his show has definitely grown because of what we're going through and stuff. But I think that's almost a result of the election. But I really don't think it had. I agree with Cliff. I don't think that it resulted in an election. I really don't. But it's definitely these current shows are definitely benefiting in terms of the material that they get to do every night.
If you want to hear some great memories from the people who were there in the 30 years that Johnny Carson was the host of The Tonight Show, you got to download this podcast or go to the website, carsonpodcast.com. That's the URL?
Yeah, carsonpodcast.com. Yeah. Yeah, we have some good episodes, great episodes coming up. I just interviewed a gentleman who's in his 90s who was Johnny Carson's stage manager on Carson's Cellar and Carson's Corner. Johnny arrived to Los Angeles, I think, in 1950 or 1951. He was like in his mid-20s, and it was his first Angeles show. And the gentleman was Johnny's stage manager, and it's incredible to hear somebody that was with him when he was that young.
All right, that's the kind of stuff you get on the Carson podcast. It's hosted by this gentleman right here, Mark Malkoff. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, yeah, it was great talking to you. Thanks for asking me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.